taking my baby and pumping down to the beach with the ghouls and ghosts. The water's fine with killer fish, with vendors serving a human dish. All I hope is someone knows that thing I did last year. Fingers crushed on head, my sin.
Welcome to the Skeleton Boys, a horror movie podcast. I'm Rolando.
And I still know that my name is John.
Oh, that's a good Sarah Michelle Gellar.
Last summer. Freddy, I need you to take care of the kids, Freddy.
That's like your Pennywise Freddy. That's pretty good.
No, that's my Sarah Michelle Gellar. Freddy, take care of the kids, Freddy.
You're Jennifer Love Hewitt.
Oh, am I Jennifer Love Hewitt? Yeah, I got it. I'm sad. Get a geek, Freddy. Hold on, I'll do my Ryan Phillippe. Hold
okay,
on.
Yeah, let's go.
In this movie.
That was during his marriage to Reese Witherspoon.
Yes. All right. And
good. You know what I do? Sonya Blade, or was it?
Bridget Wilson.
Yeah. No, Bridget Wilson.
She's like, you and your hair. That's the only line I remember saying.
And welcome to our annual summer special, Hot Sexy Death Summer, for the final chapter. This year, we will review I Know What You Did Last Summer, if you didn't know that already. But first of all, make sure you're following us at Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Podcatcher of your choice. Real quick, at the top, we should explain what Hot Sexy Death Summer, if they haven't watched the three other installments that preceded this.
Hot Sexy Death Summer.
What is Hot Sexy Death Summer? Sum it up for
what
us, John.
What isn't Hot Sexy Death Summer? Why is Hot Sexy Death Summer, and who is Hot Sexy Death
Summer? Yes, perfectly articulated, John. but it simply... Horror movies are not only relegated to the fall or autumn, they happen year-round. I would argue some of the best horror movies happen during the summer. So for the next 4 weeks, we are watching horror movies that celebrate summer, that only happen during the summer.
Yes.
Yes. So
we're going to review four summer movies. Four.
You know, beaches, you know, camping, yeah. Trips.
Orange County, I think, is a summer movie.
The Jack Black one?
Yeah. Yeah. I think
it is. Okay. But right at the top, John, can you sum this movie up in 5 words?
Johnny.
5 words.
Plot summary.
Drum roll, please.
For I Know What You Did Last Summer, coming in at number 3. Hit me, see what happens. That's
could have been anybody in this.
That's the fisherman.
That's the fisherman, yes.
That's everybody's attitude when they cross the street. Coming in at number 2 for I Know What You Did Last Summer, 20-something-year-old teens. And coming in at number 1 for I Know What You Did Last Summer, Hooker Baits a Few Teens.
Hooker Baits a Few Teens. The only little thing to that, Jennifer Love Hewitt was 18. She filmed this.
But not, was, oh, what's his face might have been? The dude from Roseanne?
Oh, yeah. He's like low-key older than he looks. He's always played younger.
Like, since forever, yes. Right? Like, he's always.
Yeah. He had already, at this point, he was like, done with Roseanne and was super young on that. He was like a legit teenager on that.
Oh shit, he's a year older than my brother.
Yeah.
But
he always plays like a young guy, so it's kind of, I guess, because he's kind of like has a young face, I guess. But all that,
did you know he was 14 in National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation?
Oh yeah, he was in National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation. That's true.
which means Debbie Harry was already in her 40s. No, <it's good.
laughs> Yeah, our favorite in joke. We measure time in how old Debbie Harry was.
So during the day. Because Debbie Harry was born in the 40s.
Debbie Harry was born in the 40s.
Little known fact. Yeah.
How old is she now? 70? Well into her 70s?
Pretty old, yeah.
Yeah. Alrighty. I know what you did last summer. John, what are your first thoughts on this?
Talk about a forgotten era. I mean, I think people remember the movies, but I think they forget the era of full-on suspension of disbelief. Mm-hmm. Illogical, nonsensical, but you went in just having fun. I feel like if you try to get a young, like a Gen Z person to watch this movie now, they're going to be like, why the fuck didn't they just do this? There's an app for that. No, I'm just kidding. But, you know, it's not, I remember really, really enjoying this movie and like borderline making it part of my personality. And
you used to wear your hooks for hands and fisherman coats.
I was a hooker too.
You were a hooker too. Yeah. You sold fish sticks. Gordon's.
Yeah, it's like, here, would you like an apple? And like I had a pirate accent for some reason. Apple. And I had the apple on the hook. Kind of like the little kid in Bring Her Back who's gnawing on the melon and starts eating the knife.
Nightmare fuel, that whole movie. So,
but you know, that's like, oh, this poor kid couldn't avoid doing that. He wasn't in his right mind. Not like Ryan Phillippe getting chased in his own vehicle because he ran after his own vehicle for X amount, like, 2 miles or something. Right. And then the car turns around and starts running after him. And instead of literally running in any other direction, because it's a grid, it's a grid style town. He's like, oh shit, I can only run in the street. That's all private property. No, I'm just kidding. I don't know. I don't know why he did that.
So why, when you're younger, what do you think is the difference now? Because you just kind of see more, you're older, so you see it like less.
I probably bought the soundtrack at some point too. And I was like, okay, this movie rules. Cause I like the soundtrack. Mm-hmm. I did that a lot.
Yeah.
You know,
I also had,
I did that to Resident Evil. Right. And I was like, I love the soundtrack. This movie rules. And it's like, that movie's not the best either. Like, you know, I was very happy because I completely forgot the typo negative cover of Summer Breeze opens up the movie. And I was like, hell yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. If I remember correctly, the typo negative song is not on this soundtrack, at least the one I bought, which was a disappointment. Because I think that song I already had heard before off of, what was it, off Bloody Kisses?
I think so, yeah.
It was like the big album for Typo Negative. Any other yes. thoughts?
There's an uncredited Korn song on here, I guess.
There's an uncredited Korn song on here, yeah.
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 I guess it was it Bloody Kisses? I'm sorry, now I need to know. Yeah, the one of Christian Woman. And
yeah.
I remember, like, during this, wait, what was it, 98? Yeah. I'm trying to do my typo negative timeline in my head. I'm sorry, this has nothing to do with the movie. Any other thoughts? Let me see. Some of these places, I'm like, yeah, that was definitely Los Angeles. I mean, most of it, no, of course, but it was like,
yeah, okay.
You know, something you don't really pay attention to until you live here and you're like, eh, wait a second.
Well, I believe it was shot in North Carolina, right? That's
for the most part,
for the most part, right? Because this was during Dawson's Creek time as well, wasn't it? Or the show was about to premiere or gonna premiere? I don't know.
For Dawson's Creek, starring
James Vanderbeek,
who I'm surprised wasn't in any of these slasher films. Maybe he said no.
I swear he popped up in a couple. My first thoughts are, I'm very mixed on this movie. I remember watching and liking it when I was younger, thinking, yeah, oh, this movie's cool. It's, you know, got the soundtrack, kick-ass soundtrack. But rewatching it, and probably I haven't even watched it forever.
No, yeah.
Rewatching it now, I actually love this opening shot because you get that like sweep across the ocean, and then it's just like one long tracking shot, and then of course they have like the typo negative song, the cover of Summer Breeze, and like it does like, I'm not even sure how they achieved this shot because like he's literally like circling around this mountain cliff until he does like a full 360 onto our character who's sitting there. Let me close in on, which actually was quite impressed considering the time and how it was achieved. I mean, clearly they're probably maybe doing helicopter here.
Yes. Something like that.
They clearly spent a lot of time on this opening shot. It's quite impressive. I must say, it's very, very impressive shot. And that kind of like made me sit up a little bit, because since I've seen the movie already, I kind of knew what to expect and was going to go through the movie. But watching this opening shot, it made me appreciate this opening shot and really kind of dug into it, really dug it. Great, of course, great song too, great moment. What a fabulous way to start this.
I was going to say, in general, I thought the cinematography was pretty impressive for what the movie was.
I would say so too, yeah. I thought actually like...
And I was like, Dennis Crossan...
Uh-huh.
Who went on to do other great things like Agent Cody Banks,
mm-hmm.
Agent Cody Banks 2. Mm-hmm.
Classic, the Back
Pink
in
Panther
London.
2. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, the Pink Panther 2.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The remake with Steve Martin, right? That the good Pink Panther, right? Is that what you're
talking
about?
Yeah, the best Pink Panther. That's right.
Or was it about soccer or something?
Yeah. It sucks that he didn't really go on to... He didn't really go on to do much else. That sucks.
And I would say, like, I actually kind of, there are, in my opinion, good bones here, what I would describe it. But I feel like the characters kind of feel very paper thin. Very, very paper thin.
Yeah.
But the one exception being Sarah Michelle Gellar's character, which I
would also say Anne Heche, whatever her character's name is.
Anne Heche is too. Helen yeah. was Sarah Michelle Gellar's character, and Anne Heche was Missy. Yeah, and I also feel like I feel like the guys here are like have some of the thinly written characters. I never noticed, but Ryan Phillippe is just like angry, yelling at people. Just
fucking,
like,
yeah, like he's on steroids or something. Like he's just yelling and shaking people.
See, that would actually make sense. Like if they would have played up the whole jock thing, maybe he was like, you know, taking shots of steroids or something in his ass. They usually could have.
Well, there's
that
like,
out.
And then all these like long sequences. Well, not super long, but like long enough to show Ryan Phillippe is like working out and he's by himself for whatever reason, and he's like kickboxing and he's like actually like. Impressively, you know, sparring with a bag and all that,
right?
And then gets totally fucking owned by like this older dude. But anyway,
the dynamics of these relationships is like Freddie Prinze Jr. is supposed to be dating, but literally dating Jennifer Love Hewitt's character Julie James and Freddie Prinze Jr.'s character Ray or whatever. Like
I was trying to figure that one out too, because it was like they're hanging out. And then I only knew that they were dating because Ryan Phillippe randomly said, like, I told you I'd take care of your girl. I'm like, oh, okay.
Well, yeah, because the first 5-10 minutes of this movie, they're like having sex on the beach. The very first scene we see between, the characters, like, Ray is saying something incredibly sexist. And like, yeah. And she's just sitting there like, oh, playing it off and laughing and stuff. And I was like, what is the dynamics of this relationship? It's so awful.
Yeah.
It's so terrible. Yeah. I don't know. It didn't work for me.
I do recall thinking, I don't like Ryan Phillippe because of this movie, but it's totally not his fault. He did exactly what he was probably told to do. Whatever right. The script gave him. Like, because I adore Ryan Phillippe now. Like every time he pops out on something, I'm like, oh yeah, it's fucking Ryan Phillippe. I'm excited.
Yeah. And he's, of course, of this era, he did Cruel Intentions, which was also a great movie.
Then he went on to do bigger and better stuff. MacGruber. MacGruber TV show.
Any chance you get, we're going to mention MacGruber.
We're going to talk about MacGruber.
But overall, like, yeah, I was more or less invested in this movie, noticing little details of it, right? Like, things to like about it. But yeah, I couldn't get over the fact that I think there's actually something to this premise where they kill somebody, and I almost wanted to see, like, and then it goes to, like, a year later, and they're clearly not over it, and it's affected them in their life, and where they were going to be and stuff like that. So it's kind of like set up pretty well. But then I almost want to know what happened in that year, like, just out of curiosity of like, how did they try to move on and how did they end up where they were going to end up?
But in the setup, I will say something that just kind of bothered me the more I thought about it. The choice to make Freddie Prinze Jr.'s character sober that night,
mm-hmm.
and then having him drive and then the accident happens, like, nobody's ever going to believe me. I'm like, why wouldn't they? I'm confused.
like it's like the rationale of it, right? Like,
which I get that they're supposed to be just teenagers and they're just freaking out and they figure like this is the best way to cover it up. But
right. Because he,
I guess if this was any other town, Ryan Phillippe's character, one of them would be like, let me just talk to my dad and we'll cover this up. But you know, this,
there's like an unspoken thing about classism, isn't there? Like here. in the movie, yes, about how like there's fishermen and then there's like the rich people. It's very quaint.
What's his name from Big Bang Theory, right?
Right, exactly. Like, that's a perfect example, because he kind of seems like
Johnny Galecki. Yeah,
he seems like kind of like poor kid, right? He seems like a wrong side of the tracks type.
Which
very thinly,
it's like such yes,
he's
right,
like at the party in the beginning of the movie, but he's like waiting. He's like working, right? That's kind of the idea.
And it's what, like very I'm considered poor because I'm upper middle class, right? Like I guess, and I guess the same idea for Freddie Prinze Jr. is supposed to be on the same level as that as well, right? Like, oh, he's also poor, kind of.
So maybe there's a little bit of that, but it's not like present in their decision making. When they're trying to decide, he just thinks that all he says is that I was driving, it's manslaughter, it's not, I shouldn't have been driving, which is like on its surface true. If you're like in that rationale, it's true, right? Like,
yeah.
And he feels like, but they're gonna get me for manslaughter for running him over dead.
I'm just also surprised that Ryan Phillippe's character is so aggressively angry,
screaming at everybody, know, dude. It's so obnoxious.
100% totally, like today would be like, well, it's your fucking fault. It's not our fault. You fucking killed him, not me. Like, it would be that. Not like, and how do we figure this out together?
And it almost seemed like...
And let me shake Jennifer Love Hewitt. Tell me you kill him. We're gonna kill him. Like, Jesus,
I know,
dude.
The choices are bad. And it's not entirely his fault. But I seem like there's even a hint, like, you could even argue that maybe he was paranoid because he had a football career. Like, he was gonna go to college.
Yeah.
He was gonna, like, be this star quarterback, blah, 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 right? So, like, and he wanted to be a NFL player. So he clearly was thinking of himself in that moment. Though it's not, like, clearly spelled out. But you can kind of infer that he's trying to save his ass. It almost feels like, that's what I mean. Like, there's like, good bones here. But they do, like, the bare minimum of character work to kind of just get you through to the slasher elements.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I guess ultimately maybe that could have been fleshed out a little more and it probably would have made the movie less fantastical. Is that fair to say?
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. And even like Julie James, the Jennifer Love Hewitt character, she's kind of, you get the sense that she doesn't have a dad in her life. She only has her mom. And so maybe that's why she feels,
I mean, disconnected. I kept forgetting that was even a thing. I thought maybe she only has her older sister and they live in a 3-story house for some reason.
Right. And and I think that like, it's kind of unsaid, right? That like, maybe that's why she's like feels left out a little bit. Maybe why she's dating a poor kid or whatever, right? Freddie Prinze Jr. Because he's clearly one of them, right? Because Ryan Phillippe does mention that later in the movie that like he brings up the classism in the latter part of the movie where it's like they're all kind of like socially in the same group and he's kind of like the outsider of it. He's kind of infiltrating there, which is another like undeveloped story element they didn't really like follow through with.
No. Yeah. I mean, all that, I guess I didn't think that far into it. It makes more sense. I really wish it was fleshed out then.
Right. That.
And then it would have made more sense to make Freddie Prinze Jr. the red herring, right? Because then, oh, he's a poor kid and he, you know, you kind of screwed him.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, even though he kind of screwed himself. Because there's a lot of weird dialogue, like, not all of us can, like, you know, just move into West Village and hang out at a coffee shop, blah, blah, blah. Like, okay, so he's going to New York?
Right. Like, yeah.
And Jennifer Love Hewitt's like, I can't do that. So is the idea Jennifer Love Hewitt's also poor?
No, I think she's part of she's clearly poor because she has like a fucking giant house. But I think because she seems like she doesn't have a dad in her life and that somehow is like made her feel like, you know, angst or like on the outside of this rich circle.
I'm just saying, like, we see Freddie Prinze Jr. finally later and he owns a boat.
mean, like, he works on a boat. He doesn't own it. He just works on it.
Well, he renamed the boat, remember? So it's got to be his.
Oh, I didn't recall that part. But
well, that's why she freaks out, right? Because she's like, she sees the name on the side of the boat. She's like, oh no, he's the killer. And it's like,
oh no. No, well, I guess I was just missed that part.
It's a whole thing. Anyway.
But I don't know. It just seems like that's what I mean by like there's like good story elements that you could kind of mine out. It almost seems like there should be a TV show.
Oh, interesting.
But
or a remake coming out later this year.
I know, which I'm super excited
in
about.
A month or so. Yeah.
I'm so happy Jennifer Love Hewitt and Freddie Prinze Jr. are returning. I can't wait to see what they do with it. I love a legacy sequel. Oh, prequel.
I remember.
Whatever the fuck it is.
I forgot what movie it was. It was recent. So it either had to have been Bring Her Back or what else did we watch?
The Surrender? Oh, in the theater? Well, I haven't. It's been a minute since we've been in the theater. Something was. I don't know. I don't remember.
Are you sure? I think we just did one recently. Oh, I have the thing right here in front of me. Oh, Regal Spiral. Just kidding. Let me see. Sinners.
Sinners.
One of the previews was for I Know What You Did Last Summer, and my partner Tess worked on that along with a couple of other my friends. Like, my friend Anthony worked on it too. He actually had to watch the first movie to find a sign that he had to replicate for like one of the pier, the port bars or whatever,
right?
And everybody was like, oh cool, whatever, and we're all watching the trailer, and you know, you can tell who the older people are in the crowd because you could hear like older people like, oh whoa, because it's I Know What You Did Last Summer, and Freddie Prinze Jr. popped up. I was like, whoa. And then I was like one of like four people, and then Jennifer Love Hewitt popped up, and I was like, whoa. I'm like, what the fuck, guys?
Freddie Prinze is back.
<They're both> in the movie.
Anyway, I should probably say that I've always had a massive crush on Jennifer Love. My early crush.
J. Hugh.
Yeah.
And then Sarah Michelle Gellar was Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Yes. Which I would say her character is excellent. Like, her character arc is excellent. It's quite sad. And I think it works really well. And she's actually not bad in it either. Because Sarah Michelle Gellar, as much as she's like a part of this time, not my favorite actress. So I'll just say that. But she's part of a lot of things I've enjoyed over the years. But
I was a big fan of Freddie Prinze Jr., but because I think like She's All That's been one of my all time favorite movies since it came out. Mm-hmm. Which is also why I was like obsessed with like Matthew Lillard. And surprisingly, that's it. What's her name?
Sarah Michelle Gellar.
No, that plays this, the main...
Rachel Lee Cook?
Sarah Michelle Gellar does come out in She's All That.
Yes.
She makes a cameo.
Rachel Lee Cook.
Rachel Lee Cook. I don't know. I never really followed up on her after that movie.
Oh, she took the glasses off.
But she had that ponytail, so I didn't care.
Yeah, big forehead.
Wait, did they take the ponytail down? Wait a second.
Yeah. I think that Sarah Michelle Gellar character is pretty interesting because she starts off pretty she's basically a beauty queen, too big for this town, gonna go to York and be an actress.
Yeah.
And because of the events of the movie, they run over somebody. She kind of like stays home, works in the family apartment store or whatever.
Yeah, whatever, the one that her older sister takes over, right?
Right. And you could tell like her confidence is like broken in this movie. You know what I mean? She's like, the first time we see her after a year, she's like dropping stuff in a little fragrance area. And then it kind of doesn't get better from there for the rest of the
end. Something that I also couldn't just let go is when that accident happens, right? It's because they're all fucking around and Freddie Prinze Jr. is like not paying attention for like a split second. Hits somebody in the road. This guy hits the front of the car and then fumbles, topples like over the top of the car. And Ryan Phillippe is all up on there. Mm-hmm. And nothing really happens to Ryan Phillippe. I'm like, dude, how did this guy get that? I mean, I understand he got the impact of the car, but that should have fucked up Ryan Phillippe too.
Yeah.
But I feel like the power of anger had kept him intact. he was able to angrily keep his jaw from breaking.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know what? You know what's funny is actually, I think I forgot that detail that it was Freddie Prinze Jr. that drove the car. He wasn't drunk.
No, I didn't remember that he wasn't drunk. Because I do remember Ryan Phillippe doing the fucking hanging out the top of the car like he's going to prom or something. Like, I
don't know. Burks would be the Wallflowers.
yeah. Like, what are you doing, dude? Relax. Like,
woo, David Bowie, Heroes. Yeah,
that was funny. And then, I know I've mentioned it, I don't know how many times, that him like shaking Sarah Michelle Gellar, like, say it. And she's just there, like, limp. It makes me think that they did the take so many times that she was just like, I don't want to do this anymore. like, please, is this it? Is it done?
I know, yeah. I don't know what the direction was here. Maybe it was just because the idea is maybe like he's supposed to be this domineering jock, and so like he kind of like bullies them into helping him because it was his car. It's probably his career, right? His like future.
Yeah.
That's more at stake than any of theirs. He's like selfishly putting his stuff before anybody else in this moment, and they kind of like choose to just go along with him out of fear.
That and interesting. I'm sure you saw this, but. You know, okay, so Freddie Prinze Jr. and Sarah Michelle Gellar famously go on to get married and have been together since then.
In real life?
Only... yeah.
Oh, wait. I thought you said Jennifer Love Hewitt.
And then in this movie, they only talk to each other twice throughout the entire runtime.
No. Yeah. Yeah,
it's weird. It's like, in fact, I think Ryan Phillippe is like just by himself for most of the runtime too.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I was trying to see if there's any sort of fun tidbits about,
well, the famous
Ryan Phillippe shaking.
That famous scene where she's like spinning around like, hey, what are you waiting for, huh? You know, like that scene.
Oh, the kid, right?
Yeah. Yeah. That like it was directed by a kid who won a contest, and that's what he came up with. And it's like an iconic moment in this movie and in horror movies of this time. And it's just some random kid who won a contest thought that would be cool if she's spinning around and yelling, what are you waiting for?
And it worked. And it, you know, and that little kid famously grew up to be
Christopher
Barack
Nolan.
Obama.
Oh.
Quentin Tarantino.
Quentin Tarantino, yeah. No, but they don't know what happened to this kid. Nobody knows. He just did this and that's it. I don't know. He never pursued a career.
Oh, I think the kid went by Alan Smithy.
Oh, do you want to explain that joke?
joke for everybody is famously, if a director doesn't want their name on a movie, they go by Alan Smithy. So if you look up to IMDb, there's a lot of credits for an Alan Smithy.
Right. Or sometimes they just change the names in general, right? Like Francis Ford Coppola famously helped shoot Supernova. Remember that movie? But didn't get credit for it. But yeah, he came on to finish it as a favor. And probably because he was broke. More than likely, he was broke around this time. So he probably did it as a favor.
And I think it's what Steven Spielberg changed his name to Toby Hooper when he did Poltergeist.
Yeah, famously. Well, see, Toby Hooper had a lot of problems. Like, when you hear that story, that I think Toby Hooper got swallowed by the system. We're talking about Poltergeist, right? Like, Hooper famously did Texas Chainsaw Massacre and had a lot of problems, you know, RIP, right? Drug and alcohol. But so when he came in, Spielberg picked him to do Poltergeist. I think he was probably a little bit out of his element at that. He was just like too big. Yeah. It was too big of a thing for him that Spielberg had to come in and just do a lot of these things and direct a lot of these things. And it didn't help either that a lot of the stuff was based on his childhood either. So he's like personally invested in like the success of the picture and stuff. So,
well, yeah.
Just try to be R. fair. R. Try to be fair to Toby Hooper.
Well, it's also another classic example is Kurt Russell changed his name to George P. Cosmatos when he directed Tombstone.
Yep. Famously also took over. Not that any of these things have to do with what you did last summer, but you know who we haven't talked about yet? We have not talked about...
Well, can I give you one more tidbit about George P. Cosmatos?
Yes, you can give me one more tidbit about George P. Cosmatos.
He's panel of Cosmopolitan Tomatoes' dad.
Yes.
In case everybody's wondering, who directed Beyond the Black Rainbow? Never went on to direct anything else. I'm just kidding. Did Mandy. Okay.
But we know we haven't mentioned yet.
No.
You're going to feel silly. We haven't mentioned Anne Heche yet. R.A.P. to Anne Heche.
Oh, yeah. R.A.P. Anne Heche. Well, no, I said like she's probably the only other good part in the movie aside from Sarah Michelle Gellar.
Yes. And I think that she has an interesting... I don't know, like, I don't think Anne Heche gets enough credit, right? Like,
no. Everybody focused on her having mental issues as opposed to, like, what her career really was.
She also had other problems, too. Drug, alcohol.
Ellen DeGeneres. Yeah.
Ellen DeGeneres. She did Ellen DeGeneres. But, yeah, she had, like, this small part in this movie where she plays the sister of the victim that they're investigating, trying to figure out who this is. Egan or something, right?
Or is that a spoiler?
Yeah, it is a spoiler. Yeah,
I guess we're gonna go with the sister, yeah.
And then and so like just this small scene, she projects so much, and you can see a little bit of vulnerability, you can see a little bit of like they set it up that she possibly could be the killer too. Maybe she's the one that sent this note. It's really good. It's a small part, but it actually she has a couple she appears, you know, a couple times, and I thought she was quite good in it. Very memorable.
I thought, yeah, very, like, excellent. And then what bothered me was, like, I don't know about the wardrobe choices. Like, why'd they make her out to look like a hillbilly?
Yeah. Because it's North...
It was a weird choice.
North Carolina. Yeah. And I guess, like, the idea is that people who live more inland are, like, not rich, right?
So they were drab colors.
They look
yeah.
straight out of the South. Yeah.
Yeah. Even though she's got this beautiful home. Like, yeah. And then that part later where Jennifer Lopez was trying to find her and she comes out and she's got like her knife out like that, but it was like because she was doing something else, but it's not, it still doesn't make sense. It was like, okay,
Yeah, because I like that there's a little tinge of moment here where she's like, well, I don't see a lot of people, and she doesn't want them to leave, so she's clearly like lonely,
sad and lonely, yeah.
And her brother passed away, so it's interesting. It's a very interesting little part that I think, like, I'm not familiar with Anisha's like timeline, but at some point they did try to make her like a movie star. She was in 6 days, Seven Nights with Harrison Ford.
I was gonna say basically that same, like, a right after that, yeah.
Yeah, that was around 98, 99 when she was in that.
I mean, she did Donnie Brasco, came out the same year this movie came out.
Interesting, yeah.
Volcano came out the same year this came out. She was in like four movies this same year.
She was hot, like, she was like, you know.
She was coming up, yeah. Yeah. And then tragically passed away, to be honest.
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, very tragically. Okay, should we get into spoilers? Unless you have any other thoughts.
No, yeah, we can get spoilers.
Wait! No, stop talking, guys. Stop the podcast. Stop. Please stop the podcast. Because we're about to go into...
spoilers.
Okay, so let me explain what I thought this was. I don't know why I thought this, because it's not at all true. I thought the guy they ran over wasn't the dad, was the one that was lovesick. I don't know why I didn't remember this detail about
that
it was the dad of the girl who died, and the guy we're watching at the very beginning of the he's murdered by the dad, the grieving dad, and then they run over the dad, right? Walking in the thing. Is that correct?
No, I think the Aunt Hesha's brother killed himself.
Yes. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So I don't know what the dad was doing out there. I think he was just like grieving, I guess. I don't know. Something about it didn't add up either. It's like, this isn't, I know he's not, because I recalled it being like, I thought he was the dad of the son that killed himself, the dad of Aunt Hesh, but no, he's the dad of the girl, right?
Yeah. But he did kill David, because he was avenging his daughter. That's what the summary that I'm reading.
Okay.
Since Ben was the man that had to run over a year earlier, moments after he killed David to avenge his daughter. So the guy we're watching in the cliff, because I guess they do allude to it, because like he's like playing around with that little like spinning metal thing, or whatever, and then he hears like a little like rustling or whatever of rocks and bush. So that is the only tell we get that he isn't alone up there, and that he is murdered by Ben, who is the father of Susie, which was a love interest or whatever for him, for David.
So, and I did remember that it was that guy Ben. I just remember his name was Ben, because in the sequel, which we're not going to review, the fucking killer ends up being the son of Ben,
right?
And I remember that because there's a stupid reveal where he's like, "Come on, right? Something Ben's son." I'm Ben's son. I'm like, that's the fucking dumbest thing ever.
The whole
what is this? it's like Jim Carrey as Edward E. Enigma mystery. It's like, come on, dude.
Yeah, that
world's greatest detective.
Oh, that whole sequence was terrible. I've watched it. It's fucking god awful. It's so bad. Jack Black is in it, actually.
What a cool first with dreadlocks, right?
Yeah, very offensive. Rastafari dreadlocks.
That's the that's what they're making fun of in Club Dread.
Yeah.
With that character. Brandy's in it, right?
Yeah. Brandy's in it. Yeah. So bad. So bad. But I wanted to watch it because I had a huge crush on Jennifer Love Hewitt. I've watched movies for less,
but yeah,
of a reason. So.
So Benjamin Willis, the fisherman.
Yes, Ben Willis.
Which I'm surprised that I was like, there's no way they're going to be able to stop him. And they can't. He gets his hand cut off at one point, and I'm like, he's going to regrow that shit, I think. Because he made such a miraculous recovery in 1 year. I was like, this guy is fucking Wolverine or Deadpool. I don't know. This is insane. Mm-hmm. This guy's perfectly fine. And he's older, too.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of like an interesting... this is where the movie kind of breaks down for me. Because not only did he like follow them and take pictures of them and has this like whole thing set up on his boat, he like purposely was like playing around with them, like
I was gonna say, he's hazing them? Yeah. I'm gonna cut your hair off, Sarah Michelle Gellar. Fuck you. You took something I love away from me.
And then
what was that? I don't know. They just hit him with a car.
Yeah, we try to run over Ryan Phillippe, and then like this is the dumb one, I think. This is the stupidest one, where they have that guy dead in their body with the crabs. And then she hears it, like Jennifer Love Hewitt was like driving or something. She hears it and then stops and checks, and she's like, "Oh, there's crabs. I have crabs." And then runs away. And then what's the logic here that he cleaned up this entire thing? And then did he lay something down? Did he always have that intention that she knew that she would get so freaked out she would run away for exactly probably 20 to 40 minutes job that of picking up that he laid something down for her to pull out and not leave any trace of ice or anything?
That's what I mean. I think like if these kids had just spent a little more time getting in touch with their community, understanding their town,
right,
then they would have a way better understanding of the geography. Because as far as I'm concerned, they all went in complete circles, because I don't know how this guy is able to, like, he's like, I don't know, if you just cut down Monroe Street real quick, it's literally right here. I don't know why Jennifer Love Hewitt took the long way.
I never took this. When I was watching this movie and he's like, specifically during the chase scene where Sarah Michelle Gellar's like running from him and then she like goes to the department store and stuff, I was like, well, yeah, this is clearly Michael Myers, right? That's what they're doing here.
Yeah,
it's just total riff on that idea that, you know, he's just following them and chasing them. So once that kind of popped in my head, I noticed what you're saying. I noticed as well. It's like, how did he end up in front of him? How did he, you know, how did he end up over here? How did he accomplish all these things? And it's sort of just, you do the whole like movie making hand wave that, oh, it's just a move type thing. So
when did he find time to be a precision driver?
When did he have time to fish? When did he have time to have an actual life and career? I mean, this guy, it's very, very ridiculous.
But the precision driving thing is like, he drives that fucking BMW in reverse for like a couple of blocks.
Yeah.
Very precisely. And Ryan Phillippe is, I guess, a fucking idiot and runs right after it. And he's like, I'm going to fuck you up. And I'm like, he's in a car, stupid. What are you doing? Mm-hmm. Also, I need to understand how this gym works, because Ryan Phillippe goes and showers. He comes back out. He goes to the lockers. He's in his towel. He's going to grab his clothes. In the background, you can see that the gym is right there. I'm like, so dudes just hang dong while people are working out? And confused.
Yeah. And then
did you catch that?
in the showers, the hoses and everything come alive and pull him out and start spanking him with the towel. Like Freddy's.
Yeah. Oh yeah. That's right.
I'm just saying, if they would have taken Ryan Phillippe's character, Barry Cox, in a more like homoerotic tone, that would have made all the difference for his anger.
Yeah, I think so.
It would have fleshed out a lot of his like anger and just like general douchiness, because he would be hiding something, right?
Yeah, he was just pissed all the time.
He's just like, yeah. Or even like we said earlier, like maybe he was on drugs or roids or something, you know, write it up jock.
That would have been, yeah. And I don't remember the fucking red herring, like Freddie Prinze Jr. every time he pops up ended up being comical for me, because
right,
like at one point they're like, Sarah Michelle Gellar's like, he attacked me or whatever, and Ryan Phillippe is like, he fucking hit me with the car, and Sarah Michelle, Jennifer Love Hewitt's like, oh, he attacked me also, and it's like, Freddie Prinze Jr., you haven't gotten anything. He's like, no, I got a letter. And it was like, oh man, I think it was supposed to be funny, right? I think.
Yeah. No, it was supposed to be funny.
Like every single time he popped up, right?
It's because Freddie Prinze Jr. is not that great of an actor. That's why.
Damn.
I know you like him. I know you crush on him. But he's very, at this point, he is very average.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I think that was clearly just a joke. I think that was supposed to be like,
got a letter.
Yeah. They're trying to like make you think that, oh, it's Freddie Prinze Jr. That's stalking him.
But I didn't think it was, because he got a letter.
Exactly. Exactly.
The movie gets real silly like real quick.
I mean, yes, yeah, it does.
And then finally, like, everybody starts dropping like flies.
Yeah,
which is funny. I love that expression, because, you know, I chased down a fly for like what seemed like 17 years.
But yeah, and then they end up going back on the boat called Billy Blue. The boat is actually called Billy Blue, right? And then,
which was what Anne Heche's character talked about. I think, yeah, he said his name was like Billy Blue or something.
Yeah, and so,
and then that was supposed to be one of the like, what? Oh shit!
Even if Freddie Prinze Jr. character, he called himself Billy Blue, right? To go talk to hide his identity, to talk to Misty and Hayes's character. And
No. What the fuck was it? He named the boat Billy Blue because he was still trying to grieve, I think. I think that was a nickname for the guy that Ben killed to avenge his daughter.
And like,
am I wrong on that?
I don't know.
Well, either way, that was supposed to be the reveal. I think I recall in theaters thinking, oh shit, he is the fucking killer. Whoa.
The old man, random old man.
No, Freddie Prinze Jr.
Yes, yeah. He uses that name. He uses that name to talk to him, right? Because he
didn't. And yeah, because he didn't want her to know, and she fell in love with him for talking to him for a couple seconds. But also
that's another storyline I would have liked to have seen. Where's the Christmas Junior and Haish scene?
Yeah, I would have rather I would have seen more of this. Yeah,
but yeah, and then they, of course, they go on the boat. There's like a very kind of whatever boring action scene on the boat. He tries to kill him, gets his arm cut off. He eventually he gets knocked out of the boat, but we don't know if he's dead. And Julie and Ray survive. And then we go up another year. And then Julie's in college in Boston, which I didn't recall she was going to school there. And she's entering a shower and she notices the word "I still know" written in steam in the shadowy door. A dark figure crashes through the door. So I guess they just...
Which, like, if I recall, in the second one, it ends up being like a dream sequence or something, right?
Something like that. I think they mirror this shot again. Yeah. They do this shot again in the movie, if I recall. It's, I still know what you did last summer.
Yeah. Which I feel like I remember it was just a dream sequence.
Yeah.
For the opening, I think. The cold open.
Yeah. I guess they just wanted to have that last... scare, kind of needless overall.
But why did they kill Johnny Galecki's character just because he happened to be there at the same time? And even though he was like
he
fucked up on the ground,
he technically was there and did nothing from the killer's point of view, right? Like, I'm thinking because he did.
But how did the guy see any of that? His face was shredded.
Good point. Yeah. I don't know why they murdered him. Yeah.
Maybe he just likes killing people. Maybe there's like a whole slew of deaths. And is that what Jennifer Love Hewitt and Sarah Michelle Gellar are looking at? They're like, oh, a bunch of people died here. And I don't know. Maybe I'm making that up. I think they were just looking up when that girl died and then when the son got killed, allegedly killed himself.
Right.
There's a sequence where they're looking up old newspaper clippings.
Yeah, I don't know why he was murdered. Maybe because they just needed somebody to murder. I don't know. Yeah, you're right. It's very loosely. The only thing I could think of was like he's very loosely a part of it because he drives by and then like
why kill Sarah Michelle Gellar's sister then? Why Bridget Wilson?
Because she was in the way. I don't know.
Because she's a bully. No,
I don't know. Yeah.
If there's one thing Benjamin Fisherman guy can't stand for is bullying.
And then the cop dies too. Right?
Oh yeah.
Cop that dies. Yeah, they could have worked. Yeah. They could have fleshed out some of these more novel ideas.
But right before the killer gets his hand chopped off and thrown into the ocean, he goes, one word of advice, Jennifer Love Hewitt, when you kill somebody, make sure they're dead. And then that's exactly what they didn't do. It was
twice.
Yeah.
Three times, actually. Three times. Because technically he died twice in this movie. Die, quotations. And then...
yeah.
He's murdered in the second one. I mean, that's never here nor there. But yeah, but so you know, more of the story, teenagers suck at killing people.
Yeah, they're going to cover up whatever they fucking can. Yeah. So,
alrighty. Do you have any other last thoughts before we rate the movie, John?
No.
Alrighty, let's rate the movie. It's our unscientific but very sexy rating system. John, how many sexy spooky bones do you want to give?
How many sexy spooky bones will you give? Sexy bones. Ooh, sexy bones. Well, I know what you need. Show us your sexy spooky bones.
No, wait, don't do that. Just rate the movie. I Know What You Did Last Summer, for nostalgia purposes, a 4.8 sexy spooky bones.
Four? Damn.
0.8. It's close to a five.
You've just been on a tear recently.
That's true.
You're Pitchfork, the movie review person now.
Well, I now have no desire to rewatch this movie. So
True.
It's like pretty dramatic how I was like, man, I love this movie. What the fuck is this?
Okay, so you had like a negative experience revisiting the movie.
A little bit, yeah. I was like, oh man, this is not at all what I remember.
Yeah, and I think that I'm more in line with like, I liked it at the soundtrack, had fun with it, and I just completely just forgot about it. So revisiting it, I actually found things to enjoy about the movie. So I'm going to give it 10. I'm going to give it a 5. Right down the middle. It's a middle of the road movie.
Five.
I have a lot of issues with a lot of this movie, but there are, I think, things to really like about this part. I was quite shocked.
I think, just for me, bottom line is it doesn't have rewatchability anymore, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would agree with that. That's it, John. That's the first summer movie is down in our extravaganza.
Fucking did it.
The summer's only getting hotter.
Oh, amen to that, man. Fucking hell. It's been gross.
Yeah.
Like randomly intensely hot, and then it rains and it just makes it worse because it's humid.
I know. It's like we're living in Texas.
Yeah.
All right, guys, gals, non-binary pals, thank you for listening. And as always,
stay spooky.
I had to suggest somewhere.